Accession number 20457, rail 11.
Brigadier Randall, rail 11. Could you give me some idea of the general character of the ground at Tonsang?
Well, it was very similar to the ground at Tidim and Saizang. It was very hilly, scrub. That time of the year, very dry. Well, tremendous lot of broken ground, nullahs and all sorts of places where people could infiltrate. It wasn't the sort of area that one would choose to hold a defensive position. But it did actually command the route coming up from the south, particularly the crossing of the Manipur River at masthead 126.
Could you actually see the road further south and observe movement along it? Was that a reason for choosing Tonsang?
Yeah, but then the Japanese didn't come along the road. I mean, they never did. I don't think I personally, botanically, ever actually saw any Japanese at that time, because we were some distance from Richmond and some distance from where the other company was. So, but certainly there was no movement along the road by the Japanese, no.
Did you generate a lot of patrol activity to try and cover the ground between the defensive positions?
Oh, yes, indeed we did, yes.
Did they have contacts?
I mean, our main task really was to sort of, as you said, a rear guard really, was to hold up the Japanese as long as possible by patrol action. We also had, we had this mountain battery with us, and so there were FOOs, I think, with both our companies who could sort of harass the Japanese and delay them. I mean, it wasn't a position we knew we were going to have to stand and fight in. We realised we were a rear guard, and simply the object was to delay rather than to hold the ground.
What sort of targets were they engaging, the mountain guns? Were they able to fire on... Were they firing speculatively, or were they firing on spotted targets?
Oh, I don't think the ammunition supply system allowed for sort of anything in the way of harassing fire. I mean, I think we just... They only fired when there was a worthwhile target.
How long were you actually in position in Tonsang before?
Well, I think we were only there about five or six... About 5 or 6 days.
Well, what happened after Richmond was lost? What happened to that company that was pushed off it when the Japanese overran Richmond?
Well, what was left of it, took up another position, I think somewhere near the road. But I think that happened not... just about the time we were about to withdraw from Tonsang anyway, go northward. We certainly moved away from Tonsang and crossed over the Manipur River, and then we went through some other troops who were holding a similar layback position.
So it was a leapfrog to the rear.
The usual sort of rear guard retreating.
How did you actually move back in this case when you abandoned?
I think we marched.
But I mean, did you consider yourselves in contact there, having had this attack from the Japanese on Richmond?
The Japanese didn't sort of press home their attack. Again, I think in a sense it was the same position as that they were coming down our main axis from the south, trying to keep our attention, whereas their main effort as it was to come round the flank, actually, and they came in across the across the mountains further north to cut us off. So they didn't press this attack after Richmond.
They didn't exploit.
They just sort of maintained contact, but it wasn't close contact. Mm. We didn't have a sort of fraught situation getting out of Tonsay.
Did they hold Richmond once they'd taken it?
I mean, what?
Did they hold Richmond once they'd taken it?
I think so. Mm. Well, no, I'm not sure they did. Mm. No, I don't think so. I don't think so, because it hadn't got any. It wasn't a sort of key position from the point of view from their point of view. I mean, they didn't anticipate we were going to counterattack and retake it, so I wouldn't have thought so. They were conducting fairly mobile operations.
So when you withdrew from the Tonsang position, did you have to do it by thinning out forward companies, then falling back through, or forward platoons and falling back through?
Well, I think we did. Again, a bit vague about it.
What about battalion headquarters? What did you do when the order came to fall back? Did you have to do a tactical withdrawal at that point, or did you just pack up and move out?
My recollection is that we just up sticks and marched off into the night, crossed over the river during the night, and then headed northwards. And we were joined at some stage by the other two companies, rather like the same sort of way we pulled out of Sizing. We certainly, it was not a fraught situation. I'm quite clear on that. The CO wasn't, we weren't worried about the sort of tactical withdrawal where you thin out platoons and you have defensive fire. It was a fairly straightforward, clean break.
What about patrolling? Did you carry that on until you pulled out, or did you pull in patrols before breaking contact and marching off?
Well, certain companies would have had patrols, just sort of OPs around them. I think again, the Japanese were not pressing us, though. Therefore, they weren't in close contact, and I think they would have had their normal OPs and patrols. I'd withdrawn those in, and then before they pulled out themselves.
So these have been standing patrols and OPs watching approaches and so on.
I think so. Yes.
Mm. So, but you did move out at night rather than in daytime.
It was at night. I'm sure.
Did that cause any particular difficulties or complications moving out at night?
Not really. No. I think most people were only too happy to move at night because you can't be fired at by guns.
So you went back up the road, over the river, and you went...
Then Tonforce was then disbanded.
So Tonforce moved as Tonforce, and it went...
Passed through the next... Tonforce then was... We just became 710 Baluch, and the mountain battery, and without other people we'd had, just went off back somewhere else.
Presumably went back to their own parent units.
Well, that's right, yes. Or redeployed somewhere else, that's right, yes.
So what happened to you? What happened to 710
Baluch? Well, we then went back to a layback position, but I can't remember where it was.
Yes.
I remember we could see the road going south, and we could see vehicles coming round this winding road being shelled by the Japanese. We felt very sorry for these chaps coming through, and then the Japs got these high velocity, very accurate 75 millimeters, and were picking off trucks on this convoy, and then a vehicle would be hit, and the poor chaps were having to shove the vehicle over the side to clear the way. There was a machine gun battalion of the Jarts, not of ours. They were divisional troops, not divisional troops. They were corps troops. We certainly passed through them, and they had, I thought, the rather tactically unsound task of holding up the Japanese while the division got away.
Why was it tactically unsound?
Well, because machine gun battalion is really a supporting weapon for other infantry dug in. It isn't itself to give it the job of holding up a large enemy's force is not really a staff college solution. Well, they did it very well. I'm playing golf tomorrow with a chap who was wounded there.
What sort of order were they in when you went through them on that occasion? Were they?
Well, I just remember seeing these Jarts dug in with Vickers guns everywhere. That's really all. I can't remember. And we hung about there. We got shelled a bit ourselves, but we weren't engaged with the Japanese at all. All we did was a hell of a lot of forced marching. Day and night, back. I think we marched all the way back to Imphal. Well, we did. I know we did.
You said there were a lot of machine guns dug in everywhere. Were these dug in individual gun pits? Do you remember anything about the way they were?
I think they were. I'm a bit vague about it now.
Because presumably one thing would be that they could generate a terrific volume of fire, couldn't they?
Yes, but that's all right in the Western Desert or somewhere like that. But in a fairly tight country like this, you want just men on the ground, and it's the biggest gun is fine. It's on interlocking fire, but it doesn't give you the same sort of fire support that an LMG can give you, firing at a particular target. And of course, in that very hilly, there were all sorts of nullies and ravines where the Japanese could come up and infiltrate, and indeed they did.
Had you noticed in your encounters with the Japanese at that point that they were inclined to use infiltration as a way of attacking?
Well, I think that's one of the lessons we learned in 42. There had been quite a bit of tactical doctrine. Our training had involved that, and of course we had studied Japanese tactics. And this was the classic Japanese thing: you put in a holding attack on the front, and then you put a left or right deep hook round the back to try and cut them off, and go on doing it. And the Japanese were following their normal doctrine.
What were supposed to be the ways of countering that sort of attack? Do you remember when you were training and this Japanese tactics were explained, if you were told what the solution was to defeat them?
Well, the orders were that 17 Div had to get back to Imphal.
Yes.
Because the strategic plan was that the British were going to stand and fight at Imphal using air support. And therefore, a divisional commander might have tackled it differently. We might have just stood where we were and had air support there. But the thing was, the orders were we had to get back. So the only way to do it was what he did, was to simply take on these roadblocks head on.
Punch through them.
Just punched through them, which was it had some bloody good soldiers, lots of, that's what happened. So it was a pretty bloody frontal attacks. It was because we were up against time here. I think that they'd suddenly the penny dropped that we had to get back, and we couldn't mess about. Whereas I think. We might have just said, well, we'll form a lager, have our supply, and just hold it. But the higher strategic position didn't warrant that.
They wanted you concentrated on around Imphal.
Well, we wanted to get back to Imphal. I mean, we were beginning, I don't think, by the time we got back to Imphal, I mean, we were beginning to realise, and I think we did then, we're told, that this is all part of a major, this is just one cog in the, or one facet of a fairly major Japanese offensive.
You were saying you got back by forced marches to Imphal.
Yes.
How were they conducted? What sort of...
Well, some by day, some by night. It was pretty agonizing because Gurkhas, who I have the highest admiration for, are very slow marching at night, and very, very tiring in a night column going along, and then you go along a few yards and then you halt and then you go on a few more yards. It wasn't a question of striding out in the dark. And we spent all this very tiring business of just going a few yards and then halting and then going on again.
Why were they so slow moving at night?
I'm sorry?
Why were they so slow moving at night?
Well, because they're rather shorter in the leg than our chaps. Anyway, marching behind Gurkhas always seemed to be rather a slow business. That's the only criticism I'd ever make of Gurkhas, well, otherwise I'd have the highest regard for. But anyway, we spent hours and hours of sleepless nights, really, not covering an awful lot of country.
How far could you go during a day if you were...
Well, we did several forced marches by day. I think we must have marched 25, 30 miles, I think. It seemed to be better in the daytime. It was very hot. And a bit short of water. I mean, not critically so, but
did you lose any...
I mean, it was almost as tiring as the retreat from Burma in 42. We weren't hanging about.
Did you lose anyone to any stragglers as a result of the forced marching?
No. Oh, no. I mean, we were disciplined force. Mm. I mean, I think you had the odd chap who fell out of the line of march. He was stuffed into a Jeep Land Rover or something like that. We didn't leave anybody behind. No. It wasn't a repeat of 42. No sense there.
Well, I was thinking in terms of injuries, you know, people being... injured because of the forced marching?
No.
What happened when you got back to Imphal, when you arrived there?
Well, we were reunited with all our animals, which had been... They'd also come back. We were back to Div troops. And for about a month, we sat in Imphal, getting ourselves all reorganized. Then one day an RSC major turned up and said, I've come to requisition all your animals. And I said, well, you can stuff that or something equally rather rude. I said, why? We've lavished care on these. We're still looking after them and so on. And he said, well, we're going to do it the hard way or the easy way. Anyway, I said, well, why do you want them? He said, well, why do you think? He said, we're going to have a job to fly in enough rations for you, let alone bring in hay and stuff for your animals. I wasn't quite as rude as I thought. Anyway, the fact is that they requisitioned all our animals. And, of course, they probably came back. Anyway, it was meat on the hoof. So we then reverted to ordinary infantry.
So when you say meat on the hoof, you're saying they were going to actually eat them?
Well, the RSG took them. Yes. And as far as we know, they were slaughtered, appropriately, halal or jutka, whatever it was, and issued as a meat ration. Mm. Well, I mean, looking back, it was the only sensible thing to do. I mean, it was just sad. We'd had these animals for a long time. We trained up, you know, this is our raison d'etre, recce battalion. We thought we'd had hope that we'd go back again. It was a sad business.
Did this mean then that you were no longer regarded as a recce battalion, that you were now regarded as a basic infantry?
Well, we were regarded, really. I don't think they'd thought out a role for us. See, the 17 Div then was a light, I think I said earlier when you came, the 17 Div was a light division.
Yes.
It only had two brigades.
Yes.
The other recce battalion, the 4th, 12th, 24th, they had exactly the same thing happened to them. Their horses were taken away. And then there was the support battalion, the West York, so that brigade So that there were three non-brigaded battalions in the division.
Enough for another brigade.
Well, exactly. So then a spare brigadier called Wood, Luckry being in the story for Wood, was formed, and it became known as Luckry Force. So we sat there, we had a change of CO, and then we were sent down to dig in a sort of divisional reserve at a place called Red, just north of Red Hill, Milestone 16.
So it's just south of Imphal.
Towards Bishanpur. Fortunately, we put a platoon on top of Red Hill. Divisional headquarters were right next door. Anyway, at that stage, then the Japanese, the 33rd Division, did this push through, and Johnny Nelly blundered into divisional headquarters. That would have been real chaos. They tried to capture Red Hill, but fortunately the VCR there held out, and for which he got an MC. And then we spent quite a few days then putting in attacks and things to get rid of the Japanese on Red Hill.
So what was the ground like here then at Milestone?
Well, it was on the flat Imphal plain. This was a feature about a couple of hundred feet high. I tried the road going south with very good observation of the very wet, because the monsoon started burning out. And it was looking straight down the log-tack lake, which it was filling up then. It had very good observation, and of course it covered the road. One of the problems was that it was north of our artillery positions, and the rest of the division was further on south. But they our guns couldn't turn around and fire at Red Hill, because if they'd missed Red Hill, they'd have hit divisional headquarters. So that we couldn't get the fire. So fire support was very largely from mortars. And we put in.
Which direction did the Japanese attack from? They attacked from the east.
They came. They were heading north for Imphal. They came along the hills to the west of the Silchar track, and then came round the main divisional positions, crossed the Silchar track, and then headed east, crossed the main road, and dug in on the lower slopes of Red Hill.
So they were really attacking from the west, which was presumably unexpected.
It was quite unexpected. We thought at the time that they'd actually come through the Logtack Lake. We thought they'd swum sort of come through the lake. It wasn't until I read Ian Lyle Grant's book a year ago that I realised that where they'd come from. And I had a lot to do with Ian. I mean, we spent days, well, not day, but we had a lot of correspondence, talked on the phone about this particular aspect.
What sort of positions had you created then when you'd been deployed at Milestone 16? You said you had a platoon on the hill on the road.
We did have a platoon on the hill. The rest of the battalion was just sort of in reserve, non-tactically sighted.
Not dug in.
You always had slip trenches because of the danger of possible air attack. There were a certain amount of air attack. There were still Japanese fighters and things around. Mm. We weren't sighted in any tactical way. But every man had his slip trench. Though it was becoming increasingly difficult because of the monsoon, really. So we were beginning to have to start building sort of a build up with sandbags and things.
Oh, so building breastworks rather than digging in.
Yes.
Mm. What sort of position did you have on Red Hill? Was that a
tactical position? Well, it was just a platoon position, fortunately wired in.
Yes.
Right on the top. It was fairly well dug and so on, and wired in. So anyway, this platoon gallantly held out against the Japanese.
Do you have any idea of what strength the Japanese attack was?
Well, I think in the end it was best part of a battalion. got there. But they're unsuccessful, so they dug in on reverse slope. And then the Div defence platoon put in an attack, but that was seen off. Mm. Anyway, then the next day we put in a dawn attack, three company attack. Two companies came over the top and tried to get down onto the hill, and the third company came the other way. But it was very, very difficult for the reason I said there was no artillery fire support.
You couldn't get fire support. So if I can get a picture of this in my mind, the Japanese are on the reverse slope from you.
Yes.
And you were attacking them with two companies in the front.
Coming over the top of the hill and down on. And then the third company was coming along from their flank.
Yes. So they were being attacked from two directions at once.
That's right.
Yes.
But then again, that has dangers because you may wish, if you're not very careful, your own fire, which you're directing, can hit your own chaps.
Indeed.
Anyway, it wasn't successful. We killed quite a lot of Japanese, but we had quite a lot of casualties ourselves. Mm. We lost a couple of officers.
What had they done, in the way of strengthening their position?
They just stuck it out. They put up a hell of a fine show. If anybody deserved a DSO, that Japanese commander, I must say, I take my hat off to him. Because, we had a lot of ammunition. When we weren't attacking, he was being harassed with mortar fire day in, day out. They managed to winch a Grant tank. The Carbineers managed to winch one solitary Grant tank up on top of the hill to try and... But when they got there, it still couldn't depress its gun enough to do much damage to him.
Well, was your platoon on the crest of the hill able to give you any help with this attack?
Well, that performed a firm... Yes, we reinforced that. So made that absolutely impregnable. Mm. And in fact, that was where battalion headquarters was during the battle. I remember Colonel and I went up the hill and established battalion headquarters with that platoon during the night, ready for the dawn attack.
Was the dawn attack a silent attack or a noisy one?
No, we'd fired. We'd done a bit of softening up with mortars.
Had the Japanese been able to dig in?
No, they dug in very well, yes.
Had they wired their position? Or
no, no wire.
So just dug in?
Just dug in.
To battalion?
Yes.
Were their positions significantly different from ours? Their style of entrenchment and so forth?
They had much chance, but generally speaking, they were vastly superior in taking their positions, their camouflage was brilliant. My experience is the British are never are hopeless at camouflage. It's one of the major weaknesses. It's something about the British character, in my view. I remember when later on in the war, when I'd studied this a lot, and I dug a company position modelled on Japanese lines. I regret that the Japanese never attacked me there, but I had no weapons facing frontally. They were very skillful, extremely skillful in their sighting of weapons and in camouflage.
So, if I can get this right, then in their positions they would only have flanking fire rather than frontal fire.
Well, you see.
So they could take you in for
the British always had this philosophy, you must have wild fields of fire, every weapon must be able to cover a major arc of fire. The Japanese had a completely different view. They said that let us put this position in where it's firing an enfilade, covering a very much reduced arc of fire, but which is most unlikely to be observed by anybody attacking it, and even if it is observed, very difficult for them to retaliate against it. They had a completely different philosophy of how to fight a defensive battle, and I think theirs was superior. But I don't want to be quoted on this.
Well, in this case, then you attacked their battalion. You were attacking with three companies, so it was roughly equal numbers, presumably.
Yes. Yeah. But we were up against the 33rd Division. This was This was the White Tigers 214.